I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right. You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 18, recorded live in front of an audience at the Phoenix in central London with my very special guests, Doc Brown and Asim Chowdhury. Thank you to everyone that came down and packed out that theatre on September the 17th. You are all fucking sick. Big up Seb White for recording the show. A couple things. The first 10 minutes, there's a little bit of a buzz in the microphone. Don't worry about that. Don't be put off. Don't go stopping the podcast and all that shit. It goes away and it's fucking sick. This podcast is sponsored by my brand new album, This Is Where It Gets Good. It is out right now on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, all of that good shit. Make sure you go listen. Share it, enjoy it, watch the new video for the single Trouble featuring Koji Radical and Takura, and it's out on vinyl as well. So if you want all of those things, just go online, go to thelastskeptic.com, and if you love the podcast, give it a little 5-star rating. I appreciate that. You're the best. Enjoy this.
Airplane mode, blah 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 blah, all that shit. All right, so more importantly, we're going to do a little mic check and then we're going to introduce and we're going to go right in and get fucking wasted on this beautiful Sunday night. So Asim, if you could check your mic for me, please.
Check, microphone check. It's really meek, sorry.
It's super, super
hey, who's meek? Ready to have a fucking good time? So pathetic. No, yeah, mic check.
You could do it. Think hip hop. You could do this. You
are screaming.
Hello, this is me checking this one. Hello, hello. How's that, Seb? 1, 2, 1, 2. Yeah,
sounds all right, good.
Cool.
Is it really? Can you really hear me drinking when I do this? Kind of. It's really great. You can hear what my mouth sounds
it's
like.
It's not loud enough. Yeah. Anything.
Very moist.
Super
sorry.
Moist. All right, we're in business. So with great pleasure, I'm going to introduce Thanks for Trying podcast episode 18 with my very special guests, Asim Chowdhury and Doc Brown. Make some noise. All right. Thank you both so much for being here. Like, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was actually quite hard.
Yeah.
To get here. I had to do a lot of shit to make sure I was here.
I know you actually changed flights, man, and I really
appreciate
that.
Yeah, I also realized I'd totally double booked this with something else. So yeah, changed that. Yeah, as
this
well.
All factual. But I appreciate the love, man. I mean,
yeah. I haven't slept for 2 nights. But that is not going to affect my performance in any negative way, I think.
Yeah, good.
Because I think
good.
Last time, I was way too overexcited.
Was anyone here last time for the last...
I said a lot of shit that you could technically describe as libelous.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
It did not go out. I was in the edit.
You came to my house.
I was that scared.
And we had to sit together. We had Ed Skrine on the last podcast, and he literally was so PR.
He was so Hollywood, wasn't he?
He was super like, Hollywood, and he was cool, and you said a lot of shit.
I said some fucked up shit, man. I think I slandered the BBC, ABC,
everyone,
Australia.
Anyone that you can imagine.
Individuals by name.
That's
it. It was actually shocking.
So Asim, you've got a big role to fill here.
Yeah. Well, I agree with him, but I'm like, last time I did it was just in your house, and then afterwards I had to tell you to do a few edits, but this is live. So if I say some fucked up shit, I need like the Men in Black thing that you just like,
forget that.
I didn't say that. Thank you. Let's move on. Thank you.
Well, anything is possible. And where were you last night then? What was happening?
I was in Oslo in Norway. I was doing a gig at a place called The Spectrum. Okay. And then, you know, sometimes the adrenaline kicks in after the gig and you're just like, I want to eat Norway. So kind
very
of
expensive,
went for it.
Very expensive
task. It was
task.
An expensive meal.
Okay. And was it your show? Was it with Ricky?
No, I was opening for Ricky. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Sick.
I can't really pull in 9,500 just off on the hoof.
Yeah, you can. And how has touring been with Ricky? What's been going
it's
on?
It's been great, man. You know, he's like the best boss to have because he gives you space. If you want to fly out a day earlier or a day later, you can. You know,
later, so you miss the show entirely.
I mean, like fly home a day later. Cool. Yeah,
good.
But
good.
That's
really kind
saying.
Of him. That's
yeah,
really
like
nice.
Super chill. You don't even have to do
just
the
a
job.
Holiday,
I'm just
really.
Gonna pay you.
Cool.
Just whenever you're ready, bro. Yeah. Talking, man.
Fine.
And you know, he only chooses like cities where he knows it's gonna be like. You know, a nice place to visit, a good time, you know. So it's just, it's the easiest job I've ever had. At least in stand up, it's the easiest job.
Great.
I got nothing to lose. No one's come to see me. So, do you know what I mean? I could technically be shit and it'll still be fine.
Yeah. How often are you shit?
I reckon I've been shit on this tour once. And even that, it wasn't that shit.
What happened on this one time? I'm quite
intrigued. I just wasn't. Sometimes I'm just not quite ready because I don't do enough stand up. So sometimes I'm so loose. I'm just like, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Mm.
I don't really know what I'm going to do, but I'm sure it'll be classic.
Yeah.
And you can't be that, you know, loose with an art form that is actually really complicated.
Oh yeah.
Because the thing about stand up, you know, we were talking backstage about fights, right?
Yeah.
Stand ups in some ways is similar to a fight. Like when it goes wrong, there's this moment, you know, when you get punched in the face,
yeah,
and everything changes.
Yeah, that's
like
yeah.
every you mm. fall
all that
in
shit
control.
Talking you were talking before.
Yeah. It's done. Yeah.
And it's similar that with stand up, you think, oh yeah, I'll just do this and it'll be fine. Mm. And then when there's no reaction, or even worse, a negative reaction, it can be like a body blow, and suddenly your knees go, you forget what's coming next, and it can really end in something.
It's tough
horrific.
To come back from that. Like.
It really is. Yeah. So like, I don't really die anymore on stage, but I can be like, meh. I was expecting a lot more from that
and then
guy.
You have to sit out the rest of the set.
Yeah, yeah. So there was one a bit like that, but on the whole, it's been fucking great.
Asim, have you ever done stand-up?
I've never done stand-up. I used to battle rap back in the day.
Of course.
I've died on stage a few times while battle rapping. And it's kind of like doing stand-up, but it's like, imagine if you had two stand-ups and the other guy... Basically, you're battling a heckler. That's what it is. You're battling a heckler. So like, and it was so weird. We were talking about like how sometimes when you meet people... Mm. Like I met this guy, I was at Bestival, and I met this guy, I went uni with him. And sometimes people just have this vibe which just makes you uncomfortable. Like he was in my class at uni, and like I loved uni. I did film and broadcast at uni, and I thought me and my boys we came from like West London, and we weren't like three or four of us at the same uni.
Which uni was it?
London Metropolitan. It's shit. But anyway, and he was like, oh, bruv, yeah, big up, bruv, yeah, I see what you've been doing. He's like, how the fuck do you not do that? Because you lot were fuck ups in uni. He's like, you lot used to be in the back, taking the piss and laughing. And we did do that. Yeah. But at the same time, we worked fucking hard. Like, we put the work in for our documentary, our short film. Like, we got good grades. But on the surface of it, we were like just fucking around. But it's the way he said it. He was like, I don't know how you lot achieved anything in life.
I fucking hate it when people
And
do
he
that
just
shit.
Had this negative energy that I just wanted to. It made me feel like anxious, like just chatting to him. I could feel like I was almost just like.
Did you want to battle?
Yeah, I was gonna be like, yo, check that, fuck it. No, but yeah, it was a weird energy. Yeah. It was just like you meet somebody. I was just saying, like, I don't want to fucking drop names or whatever.
Yeah,
but sometimes you meet like these big celebs, and you think, fuck, he's gonna be like this and that,
like Doc Brown.
Doc Brown. But you know, it seems to be like the bigger people are like they're just so cool and just normal, and you just like. And then you meet the people who are kind of like. You know, maybe feel like they were hard done by. I got the victim attack, and they kind of put that shit on you, that negative energy. So it just made me feel weird. But he was like being like, "Yeah, you were a fuck up in uni." And I was like, "No, I wasn't, man. I got a fucking 2-1."
So you're saying
off.
This guy was a a celebrity of some sorts.
No, this guy,
he was just a regular guy.
The positive experience was with a celebrity. Good.
The positive, and this one was he was doing social media, trying to get me to do a Snapchat for him. But he was kind of like, yeah, bruv, yeah, how you been? But it was kind of the Alpha Male shit where they kind of be like, yeah, bruv, yeah, let me get a picture. And it's like patting you on the back really hard and be like, yeah, no, but it's never for him. It's like, yeah, my boy loves you. My girlfriend loves you. It's never him. What do you want the picture then?
I saw a dude that I went to to sick form with, and he was selling sponges on the roundabout. It was in Chingford. I was driving home from Chingford, and we recognised each other. He came to the window. He's like, "Ah, what's going on?" Like, yeah, cool, man. What's happening? He's like, oh, just, you know, this and that, doing a bit of this, a bit of that. And like,
SpongeBob,
mate. His name was Bob.
And he goes to me, I see you on Live at the Apollo, bro. Bring me in. And I was just like,
I got a killer sponge routine, bro. It what? Fucking kills, bro.
Bro, what are you going
to do? It worked.
Bro, I'm actually almost down. Like, I'm intrigued to know.
Yeah, okay.
How?
What did you ask gonna bring him? To the like, table? Yeah. Did you ask him?
I asked. I said to him, "Why? Well, like, what are you doing?" And it was just this, just non-stop list of random shit. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Blah, blah, blah. I've got this going on. My friend's got this. Blah, blah. It was just like it made no sense. And I was like, I'm still struggling.
Those three words, bring me in, is part of the Weasel Manifesto. Yeah. They don't know what they're gonna do. Yes. They just want you to bring them in. You're like, what can you do? It doesn't make any sense.
No.
My mum does that sometimes. My mum, like, when I'm like, I'm writing a documentary right now called Cocky Brown Boy. And it's all about, like, it's focused on Prince Nassim and the impact Prince Nassim had on me growing up, seeing this cocky brown boy who could back it up, talk shit, talented, hated by everyone, vilified. But not just that, but it goes back to, like, you know, fucking Chris Eubank, Mike Tyson, Ali, Jack Johnson, all these cocky ethnic boys, and who could back it up. And I was telling my mum about it. She was like, that's brilliant, you're doing something. You know, that inspired me to be my character is a cocky Asian guy who can't back it up. But, you know, like, but like comically he can. But then I was telling my mum, she was like, that's great, that's a really good idea. Bring me in. She's like, I can do something.
That's funny, because my mum does that as well, but not for herself. She does it for random family members.
Yeah. I know that one.
So whenever she's like, what are you doing right now? I say, oh, you know, I'm acting in this, or I'm working on this show, or blah, blah, blah. And she go, oh, that would be perfect for Darren.
Yeah.
That would be perfect for Darren.
Bring Darren in.
I'm just going to bring Darren to work.
Bring Darren to work day. That's a day.
Hi, this is Darren.
Man, that's beautiful. So we'll you know, we have to talk about, obviously, People Just Do Nothing. We have to speak about it. It's fucking incredible. The new season is incredible. How are you feeling, like, with the reaction? It's obviously, like, snowballed through the seasons.
Can we have a round of applause for People Just Do Nothing before we go any further?
Thank you, man. That's all my brothers. You know what I mean? I'll take that, but you know, it's that's all my brothers. It's a team effort, like, and it's unique because, like, you know, Doc knows, you know, we're all boys from back in the day, and just to do something together, like, you know, I mean, like, to do something and something we love, and for it to be received and to get on a fourth series on BBC,
it's incredible.
The comedy, BBC,
it doesn't
happen
for any type BBC of TV these days.
It doesn't happen. So, and it got to a point where, like, we feel like we're gonna do one more series, by the way, and that's it. So we're doing the fifth series and then we're finishing.
Has that been announced yet?
We're going to do one more.
I think
series.
That's a good idea.
But I'm announcing it now. It's not official. We might be like, they might come with that bag. And then I might retract this statement. You know what I mean? No, but it's amazing. And it's a lot. It's a long time to do one thing for a long time. And it's a beautiful thing. But, like, you know, man, as an actor, as a creative, like, you want to do other stuff as well. And, like, even though I know that this character is going to define me for the rest of my life, and I'm completely fine with people screaming peanut dust at me on the street, the same way Brent will always be, Gervais will always be Brent, Coogan will always be Partridge. Mm-hmm. You know, these are characters that are like, I'm not comparing myself to them, but I'm just saying.
I think you maybe fucking a little should. Bit. Yeah,
fuck. No.
You, I mean, you
I'm
did.
Just
you did.
It defined. I kind of did.
If you done, I am.
Coogan won the. Coogan got the BAFTA off me, so it's fine, all right? I'm over it, obviously over it. But no, it's cool, but at the same time, like, and you love it and you love the love. But, and you know,
it's restrictive at the end of the day if you've got other ideas.
But I remember Doc wrote this piece, I think it was for The Guardian, but it was when you were talking about, and you said, this is like 3-4 years ago, and he said that people don't know that people just nothing, and this is his words. Mm. And he said, it's one of the most important comedies in terms of like, and people don't realize because we were still very niche back then. Mm-hmm. And Doc's been knowing for time, you know?
That's beautiful.
And to hear that kind of stuff from a respected comedian, you know, someone that you look up to, fucking, you know, we watch this guy.
An old person is
not at all. Not even that, but from the hip hop days, because obviously we're all UK hip hop, you know what I mean?
Obviously.
But like,
obviously.
You know what I mean? So it's an honor to know that it's had an impact on culture. Anything you do, whether it's music, film, comedy, if you have an impact on culture, you know, it's an amazing thing. But I think at the same time, you know, it's kind of like you do want to do new stuff as well. It's that urge of being like, I can do more. You know what I mean? And it's like people get hurt by it, because even when people meet me, like you lot hear me, I'm not talking like this, I'm not Trabada G. Sometimes it's a bit like, oh God, he's just a normal prayer. Like,
do you feel typecast? Do you feel like that there's an issue there?
I used to, and then my agent, like, you know, I kind of told her like, I don't want to do any shopkeeping roles. I don't want to pay the. I don't want to be the kebab boss, man. I want to create my own material, and that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And that's powerful, but at the same time, it's almost a gift and a curse. You create characters that's such a great character, whatever, but like you people are going to want that or a version of that. You don't know how many offers I've got or scripts I've seen that are like, okay, so we want you to play this guy, right? He's like a bit of an entrepreneur, and I'm like, you want a Primark, your buddy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a blessing, but
Riz spoke about that as well, didn't he? He was like, the roles that he's getting offered, 100%. A shopkeeper, taxi driver. Like,
and then you create, now when you talk about Riz Ahmed, you don't think about him as an Asian actor. Mate, you think of him as a great actor. You know what I mean? Like, he's, and that is so powerful.
Exactly.
And, you know, I'm nowhere near that. But, you know, people, like I said, I'm watching these guys, it's like inspirational. Yeah. So it just makes us want to do more and more. But you have to create more. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, you're only as good as your last project.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, you've got to be grateful for any impact you have on culture, because that's really rare.
And chronologically, for me, your last project took me by surprise, because I was on the plane to Oslo 2 days ago, and they were like, no, it's time for the safety.
British Airways.
Yeah, safety announcement. And I was like, yeah, you know, I know the seatbelt you clip it in, I'm good, you know. But then the TV screens came down, and it was Asim.
Yeah.
With Chiwetel Ejiofor.
And Tandy Ewan.
Ian McKellen, Thandie Newton.
Is it Thandie or Tandy?
No, it's Tandy.
It's Tandy.
I call it Thandie.
Of course.
I'm not just saying this because you're here. It's genuinely, because they always try and make them like quirky or funny. It's genuinely the only funny safety thing that I've ever seen on a plane.
That was the plan.
It was really fucking good.
You know what, bruv? I wrote that with the geek. Okay, so he used to be the creative director of Saatchi & Saatchi. Mm. And these, I love Mad Men. I don't know if anyone watches Mad Men.
Mad Men's great.
But I fucking love advertising, even though it's fucking soulless and it's the straight up Lucifer's work.
It's psychology.
It's psychology, but they're selling you a happiness, but in a form of a lie. Well, no, a lie in form of happiness.
I
but
want basically, that lie.
This guy, he came up with that. You know, remember that advert that was that? Avit? You know, when like Peter Kay kicks the ball.
Oh, yeah, John Smith.
He came up with that, bro. Yeah, John Smith. And like, he's done loads of shit.
Okay.
But I did this with them, and their whole thing was making a safety video that you pay attention to. Because really, it is. I don't know about you lot, but I did this video, and I still don't really know what would happen if a plane crashed.
No fucking idea.
I never pay attention.
Yeah.
All I know is that some dangly shit.
Dude, I was in the exit seat, and the guy was like, "Just to make you aware, you know, if we crash, like you're the man." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, cool."
Yeah, but you know, like,
listen.
I found this out recently that someone said, "Oh, well, you know, the reason they ask you to bend forward and put
the brace position,
that's because they want to preserve your dental records. Just think so, because everyone will die anyway."
God.
So they want to just make sure your teeth are intact. So after that, I was like, why the fuck am I doing brace position? That's not going to save my life.
No.
So but dark.
The concept of the ad, if you haven't seen it, if you haven't been on BA recently, is great. He's like a casting director, and he's got all these Hollywood megastars doing the lines that you always hear, you know, about the high heels on the inflatable slide and shit.
That's the most important one.
Yeah. And he's just, with all of them, he's just like, yeah, you know, could have been better, could have been better. You know, to like Ian McKellen and shit is great. And then he's slightly pervy with the actresses. Oh, yeah. It's very funny.
But the best bit of that, they didn't put it in, but it was in the behind the scenes, but it was, you know, Warwick Davies?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so you lot know Warwick Davies? Is it midget or... No, he's not. I want to be PC.
Diminutive.
We were talking about dwarves.
Well,
backstage.
Basically, the concept was, I was like, wouldn't it be really funny if like Chibuddy didn't give a fuck about any of these people? Gordon Ray didn't know who the fuck they were, but Warwick Davis walks in the room and he's like, "Oh my god, it's Warwick Davis!" And I was like, "Mate, listen, I've got an idea for you, yeah? Reboot of Twins, yeah? Me and you, mate, yeah?" And it was so funny. And I think it will come out eventually. But yeah, is the safest guy, man.
He's lovely, isn't he?
He's a safe guy, man.
Yeah.
Also, that would be an amazing film. Oh, Twins, yeah, the reboot.
That movie will come. There was talk of it, wasn't there?
But I don't get, what was the thing behind Twins? So a man was pregnant. Was that it?
No, that was
Junior.
That was Junior. Yeah. Was that Schwarzenegger as well?
That was Schwarzenegger as well.
I'm getting my porn and my films mixed up.
Easily done. Twins was Arnie, I mean, you guys can help me out film, but it was a bit of him, right? Hannah, you know this,
It was
right?
the run, I don't know.
The leftover, the leftover.
Oh, he was
the,
so Arnie. They won't be able to make that film into today's
DeVito was
PC. You know?
I always said that about me and Ed. I was like, "This is Twins." Anytime I stand next to Ed's crying. But that's a reboot waiting to happen. Yeah.
We should take a moment to like publicly acknowledge what Ed's crying did recently. Because have you heard about this shit?
Everyone's
just to get it in some kind of context. Very recently, there was a movie version of Ghost in the Shell, and Scarlett Johansson played the lead role in what really should have been an Oriental actor of some kind, you know. And I think it's fair to say that she probably didn't need to make the film. She probably could have passed on that and taken another film. Ed Skrein is somebody who's on the come up, really. You know, He's huge, but he's going to be way huger, right? I mean, he's on his way up to mega star.
Next Bond, bro. Next
so it's important.
This is what I said to him.
It's important that he takes these big opportunities and becomes more widely known as the great actor that he is. Mm. And that opportunity came along in the shape of a comic of Hellboy. And he hadn't read the comic, but when he read the comic after he'd taken the part, he realized that the part...
It was Asian.
The character wasn't white.
Yeah, it was Japanese.
And he walked away... From the movie.
Yeah.
Madness.
The money, walked away from the money. I mean, I couldn't believe it when I saw the statement.
Well,
we
were just
so
briefly,
impressed.
We briefly
talked about it and I shut it down to save it for the podcast.
And what I think is it's so commendable and it's amazing. And he just played a little tiny part in my short film that he's done. You know,
right.
Nothing. You know what I mean? Just came down and fucking killed it.
He's
a lovely guy. He's, you know what I mean? He's a G.
Yeah.
But I think what this, some people might say, oh, that's a dumb move, bruv. You fucking turned down money. A lot of people will say that. And, you know, it's their opinion. You can see it from what angles. But this move has put him in a new position.
Yeah.
Casting directors will see him in a new light after
and he,
this.
And he has to be taken seriously.
And you lot know him and you know that is it's not a PR stunt.
No, of course not. I mean, because I had dinner at his house before I left for LA, so this was about a month ago, and he just accepted the role for Hellboy. And he was super excited about it, and I was fucking excited about it for him. And he's a comic book guy.
Yeah.
Like he reads, but he didn't know that history, and he didn't know the nature of you know. I mean, the character's an SAS, XAS, SAS soldier. So
you kind of assume, because he's Japanese American,
but
right?
You didn't know. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think it was. I'm very proud of him as a friend.
Did you know he's got an identical twin?
I mean, is the twin calling up Hellboy and be like, listen, is that Ross?
Yeah.
You know what, to this day, I've still never met his twin, like after being mates for about 12, 14 years. Yeah, maybe I have. All those you times that he was bored of
maybe,
me.
Maybe Ed was like, oh, it's Corin again. Rich, you go.
Shit.
I can't do another night with this guy.
Some that sister, explains sister shit. A lot.
That's some sister shit right there, man.
Sister.
But no, my brother gets it, you know, and I don't think we look that alike.
No.
But there's an extra, I don't want to try and get some pity here, but I think there's a little extra edge of racism for mixed race Brits. Like, why do we, like, I know that all black people look the same. We all heard that one, right? But with mixed heritage dudes, it's like anyone. It's like, oh, you're Kieran Gibbs. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, what? That is an exceptionally fit 22-year-old man. I do not look like Kieran Gibbs.
But dog.
He's literally
anyone.
Just
dog,
brown.
I hear you, yeah.
He's literally just brown. That is it.
That's yo, when we were together that time, do you remember me, you and Ed went to see... we went to that forum to the show.
Oh, Rally Richie.
And then like me and Ed were just chilling, getting a drink.
Oh my God.
And that guy came up to you and was like, I know you. You're from TV. He was like, Reggie Yates.
Reggie Yates.
All right, wait. Get that.
What?
Can I just interject, yeah? I totally hear that. All right, but you got to remember, yeah? You mixed race brothers are buff, yeah? You lot are good looking.
We're
you know
born
what
that
I
way.
Fucking
We're
get every
way.
Day on Twitter, yeah? Any fat Asian bear with a beard. Chibani, I just spotted you down the road, bruv.
That's
He's
fine.
Not even buff and light skinned, you know what I mean? I get it. It totally works. And like, I don't even entertain them anymore. But it is like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
It's like...
That's the reason why I got rid of the beard. Because every fat guy with a beard...
I remember you sent me that picture.
I sent you the picture I found a picture in LA that was so similar to Asim that was incredible.
Well, this
but
is
in a positive
this is
way.
The first one, yeah. Normally I get any Asian bro, yeah. Any chubby Asian guy with a beard, they send me a picture and be like, you're chilling with your buddy. Yeah. But...
I did it with a precursor.
Corin,
I was like, I hate it when people do this. I'm sorry.
No, but you was beautiful because Corin sent me this picture and I don't know. We can't show it now, but anyway, if you see this picture, yeah, it was literally like, you know what's that that BBC One show where they go back in the day and they look for the ancestry and all that?
Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are, yeah? Basically,
it was so
like this
regal.
Persian prince or something from the 16th century, yeah?
My man
was spot on, yeah? And like, you know, normally, if you look, the thing is, you got to look at features. If you haven't got a racist mind, yeah, you gotta look at the nose, look at the but for real, look at the lip, look at the eyes, look at the face shape, look at the bone structure.
Yeah.
That's where someone looks the same.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not this guy's mixed race.
Mm. Yeah.
He is Reggie Yates. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you gotta look into detail, and like that is I just think it's like a standard thing that we should do. As
handsome
humans,
guy yeah. too. Definitely.
Handsome motherfucker like me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And why are you not laughing? No, but he sent it to me, and I gotta tell you, Corin. Yeah.
Yeah.
My new thing that I'm doing for Channel 4, right? So it's a new character, my new character after Chibuddy G. Yeah. So I'm not going to give away too much, but anyway.
Chibuddy H.
Chibuddy
H. It's next level.
But it's like, it's made it, that picture has made it into
that
show, shit.
So I'm just saying, it was that spot on. Like, you know.
I'm proud.
That's what I want. I want pictures that look like me.
Yeah.
Like, so I can be like, oh, and it looks so much like me that I will start questioning my...
The heritage.
Yeah, because my family does go back to the Arabs and all that, like Persians. Like, it could actually be, bruv. You never know.
I'm glad I sent it.
Or it could just be a fat bear with a beard.
Hey, he was like Wedge.
He was Wedge. He was Tom.
He had
man.
A fucking sword, right? I'm sure he had a sword.
He had a sword, bruv. But he was also Wedge, but happy. Elegant. He had like long silky hair. And like, I want to show you a lot of the pictures. It doesn't work when you don't.
You know, we'll find it. We'll find it at the piss break, and we'll show it.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just go around everyone and be like, "Hey, check this out." Tag me.
Do you find it annoying? I know we spoke about it on the last podcast about a year ago. We did you and Koji Radical. We did
I love that, by the way, bruv. You know why? Because I wasn't familiar with Koji's music.
Oh, he's incredible.
And since then, since we did that podcast, bruv, I'm like a fanboy, bruv.
He's amazing, man.
He's incredible.
He is incredible. And I feel like still not enough people know about him.
No, and he's like he's kind of like R. Kendrick. He's like he's
incredible.
He's sort of transcends
super
rap.
Diverse.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He feels like an all-round artist.
He is. That's exactly what it is. And I love that because what Corin does is that he brings people from different... I mean, I guess this is a little bit similar because we're in comedy, but we're in different, completely different kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But because of that, I learned about this guy. You learned about me.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We're friends now.
That was beautiful about that podcast is neither of you knew about each other. Yeah. And then you came in and we got fucking wasted.
We got fucked.
And that was it. Yeah. Fans, yeah, done.
It was great.
It was fucking beautiful. That's why it's lovely to have you two together. Like, when was the last time you actually saw each other? Was it recently?
We bumped into each other at the premiere of Moonlight.
Yeah, Moonlight screening with the director.
It was memorable for two reasons. One, because me and my wife and Asim and his girlfriend spent a worryingly long time trying to find an alcoholic beverage after the event. And it was bordering on desperation.
It was, we
just called it.
There was no
we called
booze.
It a night.
Yeah,
yeah. But we were on the South Bank, and it's just like it's just dead. It's just dead after a certain hour. So we fucked it off. But it's also memorable because there was a Q&A with the director and the writer who also wrote the play that the movie is based on.
It was
so that
incredible.
Was an amazing moment to meet with these guys who, you know, had created something with no money. It was just very inspirational. Yeah. But they had the Q&A, so people were coming up with questions. And my man, Asim, like, had a question that he was, like, desperate to get across.
Yeah.
And he knew the host as well. Started off ballsy, like, my question is getting asked and answered. That's guaranteed. Yeah. And he never got
paid. I got boyed.
By your boy.
He was screwing for ages.
I was fuming. I was saying to Doc, it's like that.
And a sick question, bro.
It was like, you know, when like, I don't know if you've ever been in a fight or anything, but it's like, I've been in a few fights and you get fucked. I've been fucked up, I've lost a few fights. And I always like, in my head, I'm always thinking of like, oh, bro, I should have fucking ducked that hook and ducked that. And then I would have fly kicked and like, I choreographed the fight in my mind. What should have happened? And the whole night, I was just fuming. I was like, oh man, I would have asked that question. It would have banged. I would have got a great laugh. And I was saying to Doc,
always.
And the questions were shit. And I was like, your question's shit.
Do you remember what question they asked?
I was such a hater that night.
Do you remember what question they asked?
I don't know.
All I can remember is the rage.
Yeah. I remember the rage
that he had.
I think vaguely, I mean, has anyone seen Moonlight here?
Of course.
So
watch that film.
What I think it was about the question of how important it was that scene, when his mother in that care home and they're talking about, and it was about him letting go or something. I can't remember. It was some arty bullshit. I was trying to sound smart, but I basically didn't get to ask, and it was one of those moments where it was
And everyone here should go see Moonlight, by the way, because
it's an incredible
piece of cinema. And also the soundtrack, everything about it.
And listen,
it is,
I'm
it's
a
just amazing.
Big Jay-Z fan, like, and I don't mean like from back in the day.
You've seen his Moonlight video.
And bruv, that's what I was saying, bro. But I first heard the track, and it was like the track. The first you got to hear his new album. It's a grown up first time. If you're a Jay-Z fan, you've listened to him for years, and he's a great lyricist. He's everything, but he never talks about his personal life ever. He talks about bitches, he talks about making money, and he's brilliant at it. And he's a fucking poet and one of the greatest of all time.
But on this album, he's dissing himself.
It's so fucking self-loathing.
Yeah,
but in a progressive way.
Yeah,
he treats himself like shit on this album. He literally, like, because he cheated on his missus, it's like,
so allegedly,
mate, it, and so famously, and it's like, you know, we all think of it as some sensationalism kind of celebrity shit, but his kids are going to grow up and they're going to see that shit with Solange in the lift and google it and think, oh well, Arnie beat up dad because he cheated on mum.
Yeah,
like, that's not fun, bro. Like,
so
you, know
you
what
think
I mean?
It wasn't PR, it was real?
Oh bro,
think what was real?
The cheating, the everything.
100%.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you've seen the footage of Solange, you've seen the footage of Solange in the lift.
Yeah,
and
that's not.
There's not a woman alive. If I've been in an altercation like that with a woman, there's no question it was not staged. 100%. I did some stupid shit.
That's your sister. Like, that's your sister, and you know what I mean.
I should have got kicked in the nuts for no question.
And he deserves
real.
And he
recognized it. I felt like I'd been there.
And on this album, he's completely honest about it. You know, he's like talking about when his kids grow up and they find out that he did that. I can't live with this. He's like, for a menage a trois, it was a threesome, kinky. But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's so honest on the album, but he has that still, that element of lyricism, beats.
And that
fire.
Moonlight song's very satisfying because the one thing I did want, amongst all that personal stuff, I did want him to just say something about rubbish rappers because it really made me feel good.
Yeah, same.
That bit in the chorus that's like, I don't know who is who.
I don't know who is who.
I'm just so fucking confused.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Like, if you're old and you still listen to rap.
Yeah.
And you're like, and people are like, oh, have you heard Little fucking Stomachache? And you're like, oh God. who's this guy now? I have to know him to be able to fuck this girl and be relevant to this guy.
That's a great
name. It's so true.
Oh God, so I'm just so tired.
It's like the chorus, the first lines of that song is, we living in La La Land, even when we win, we're going to lose. And obviously you don't know that La La Land was given the best film Oscar.
Yeah.
And then they were Moonlight won.
Levels.
And the song's called Moonlight. So he's talking about, we living in La La Land, this celebrity bullshit. Mm. So even when we win, we get the money, we get the bitches, we get the fame. We're still going to lose because it's all completely meaningless.
Yeah.
And he's talking about his relationship with his missus and how nothing means anything. Mm. And he's having this menage a trois, like, and his kids are going to grow up and learn that they cheated on his, you know.
That album is just next level for
it's
that.
I was pissed off because he's, you know, like, even though he's always like that, I'm not a businessman, I'm a business. Like, yeah, that's all cool. But, bruv, you made a beautiful piece of art. Get it out to the masses, bruv.
Yeah.
Don't make people sign up to your bullshit fucking title shit. Oh, shit, this is what I mean about edit this stuff
out. That's fine.
Because title, they might be like, hey, man. Do you
also, I think it's important
I genuinely don't think either you or I have got a future.
Yeah, I know, we ain't got a chance.
I think we're okay.
I also think it's important to see, because we're talking about some rap shit, which we're going to do anyway. But how many people in here are actually hip hop heads? Make some noise. That's good. That's at least like
that's decent.
56%.
Yeah. Hey, tell me this, because I meant to ask you when you were talking about it earlier, I don't want to regress too far, but you said you used to battle. Did you battle in the days when you had to improvise, or was this written?
So I'm old school. I'm
right, okay.
I'm BDF, so before Don't Flop.
Okay. And, yeah. Same.
I'm jump off era basically.
Same.
And kung fu.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I only battled
kung
a few fu? Times. And I battled at Mean Fiddler, you know, Ara and Harry all them boys.
Yeah, man.
And like my boy Marv, you know, he was DJing there. Or no, I don't know, he wasn't DJing, he was doing the scorecards or some shit. But anyway,
he looked great in that bikini.
He looked great in that
beautiful,
bikini.
Beautiful.
But I battled, and that's what I was actually gonna say, bruv. I met someone I battled the other day. I was at some fucking bougie ID fashion party.
Yeah.
Where like there was like a chick just walking around with the tits out. It was like fashion. It was fine. It wasn't porn because it was fashion. But like, yeah, it was like some madness. But yeah, I met this guy. His name's Ink. Don't know if you know about this battle rapper called Ink from back in the day. He was on a bit of a, after Pro Green and all these guys, he was on a bit of a stampede. He was one of the ones, and I battled him, and I had to battle three or four
cheese.
I had to battle quite a few guys to get to him. And then I got to him, and I remember my best punchline, his name was Ink, and I was like, my name ain't Ja Rule, but I'm going to murder Ink.
Ooh.
Nice.
Come on.
Nice.
All right.
But that was it ended, though. And then he just, he just completely destroyed me.
Yeah.
Just fat jokes, terrorist jokes.
Terrorist jokes.
And I feel like that couldn't run.
Yeah, and it was just like,
in 2017.
And I had
that.
Rebuttals. So obviously it was all freestyle. It was the first day you met the guy, and you don't know who he is. So I had like my rebuttal for a fat joke was like, you call me fat. I know it's life destruction. I'll let your mum suck my dick and give me liposuction. Like, so I had a fat, and then the terrorist thing was
That's good head.
I was like, you call me a terrorist, but I'm still gonna murder.
So difficult.
I got your mum rocking the Al Qaeda t-shirt, and I say Al Qaeda. That's when you know how old I am. Because no one gives a shit about Al Qaeda anymore, bruv. That's some dated shit. So I had rebuttals ready, but I know this is going to sound complete bullshit, but my mic was fucked.
One of them, of course.
Okay, here's the thing though. So Jump Off back in the day, and you lot will know, it wasn't the Don't Flop crowd now. The battle crowds you have now are like uni kids, they're middle class. Back then it was people from the end.
It was
fucking guys from the end.
Yeah, it was hood.
You will fuck, this is why I always respect Pro Green so much.
Because
I think he's one of the best battle rappers. Probably the best we've
best,
ever played.
Best I've seen in the UK.
Of all time.
Sick. Before he arrived.
Apart from Sway. Sway was fucking sick.
I never saw Sway.
You
were going to
say that because
Sway was
that exactly.
Sick.
You're talking about my era now.
Yeah.
And you asked Ara, asked Harry, Jump Off. I was a three times champ. And then Mudlums was the other big
Mudlums,
battle.
Mudlums, where Chester Pete, where was yeah. Chester yeah, Pete and
and
Common?
I didn't want to fuck with Chester because right, he was dangerous.
We're going into this realm, yeah?
But very.
You guys know about the rapper Common, yeah? So Chester Pete, a rapper from the UK, battled Common.
What?
And beat him.
Mm.
I swear it was either Mudlums or Battle Scars. Oh,
He ate him. But yeah, Chester was the best. And like, I was scared of going in Mudlums because of Chester. But yeah. I wasn't scared of going in Jump Off because I saw these other rappers and I just thought, I got all these guys. But then Pro came into Jump Off and that was my reign over. And Sway came into Mudlums and that was...
Yeah.
That dude was everything to me. Like, everything he did, he was like a sort of... He reminded me of a little bit of Eminem in terms of like the humor and the skill that he had.
Yeah.
But also he made amazing beats as well, yeah. which I don't think people really knew about. And he was really bringing artists through.
Sway was like, obviously, you know, Sway taught me how to produce, right?
So I was like a youngin' in that crew,
old,
right?
Like fucking in the music rooms.
I didn't know you like, them times.
It's a mad teacher.
It's mad, isn't it?
Bro.
Like I used to sit there and listen to him like recording. He always used to record his ad-libs first onto tape. We had the fucking tapes. And he would just be like,
first.
Ad-libs
first. That's like having dessert before you order the main course.
That's crazy. You know what I mean? Yeah. He would be there.
And then going back to savory. Yeah. That's insane.
Unconventional. I like that.
But I think he did it just because he enjoyed it. Like, I was sat there and he would just go, silence, silence, silence. Yeah. Silence, silence, silence.
Okay. Some shit like that. You'd have some shit like that.
Yeah. And I was like, how is this going to work? I don't understand. I'm 12 years old. What the fuck?
He was grooming you.
Hip-hop grooming. Sway is the perfect example of how little of an industry there was when we were doing our thing as youngsters.
It was tiny.
You know, because Sway, to me, was a megastar. Like, he had to blow.
Yeah,
and he did really well, but
for those,
you
for those
can't
that don't
tell
know,
me
he collaborated with Akon.
Yeah, he did amazing stuff.
He signed with Akon.
But Corinne, you can't tell me that if Sway was just appeared right now doing what Sway does, he wouldn't be a megastar like overnight. He
Big
would
time.
Be.
Well, he
that,
the, he
that
paved
infrastructure
the way
was
for
not
a lot.
There at that time. It just wasn't there.
He came on the podcast a few episodes ago, and he was talking about that people forget that he was. The first UK rapper on the BET Awards, nominated for a Mercury. He went on the like Mo, but
he was a hero. He was a hero for me, like,
exactly,
big time.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? I think that is perfect timing for the piss break. How many people in here need a piss? All right. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
And keep that applause going as we welcome back Doc Brown, Asim Chowdhury, and The Last Skeptic.
Yeah. How's everyone's piss break? All right, well, that doesn't sound very enthusiastic. Successful. All right. Welcome back to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 18. As tradition, how many people here listen to the Thanks for Trying podcast? Oh, nervous question, just in case. As you know, after the piss break, there's a tradition, right? Just purely because I'm an undercover alcoholic, everyone has to have a shot. All of my guests have to have a shot after the piss break. So because we're here, we have a beautiful... For all the listeners at home afterwards, we have a table filled with tequila. So what we're going to do right now is my lovely guests and me are going to walk around and hand out these shots, all right, for anyone that wants one. So that we don't, more importantly, don't drink it yet. You got to wait until we cheers you and then we drink it together, all right? So that's going to happen right now. All right, this is a beautiful moment. It's so
just chuck me the money whenever you lot, yeah, just give me a score. Minor, don't watch that.
All right. Everyone who's got one, please raise it in the air. If you've got a drink, otherwise, please raise it in the air. Big up everyone in the building. Big up yourself. Cheers.
Big up. Cheers.
Cheers who you're sitting next to. Cheers them.
Cheers.
It's a Sunday night. Thank you for coming.
I feel like I should say more life and greatness only.
Never gets easier.
And this is where it gets good.
Oi.
Yeah, you know, if this was a professional podcast at this stage... all the room atmos would disappear and it would be just you in a room going, you know,
all right.
when I want to listen to music, what I like to do is slipping a tape or a CD or a vinyl of real great futuristic, but at the same time classic hip hop, mixed with a little bit of electronica and just fantastic vocalists. But I always think, where am I going to find something that dope?
Where? Where, Doc? Tell him.
It's, it's a really good question.
When I'm in that kind of mood, I tend to reach for a DJ / producer called The Last Skeptic.
That's beautiful.
And the new album, This Is Where It Gets Good.
And This Is Where It Gets Good.
It's for sale.
Out September 29th.
On new September album. 29th.
My new album.
Look at that artwork. It's beautiful.
That is beautiful. That's great, artwork.
Come on.
I'm not mad at that.
That's beautiful, bro.
Taking a Jodhpur.
Yeah.
I saw you last. More importantly, I saw you last at Bestival.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was. I'm a bit over festivals in general. I love Corrupt FM touring and all that.
Yeah.
But just walking through the fucking mud, bro.
You know what I love about festivals? You know what I love about festivals? You can always spot a Londoner at a festival.
Always, like, bro. We're not ready for it. Man. And this also, like, Asian people don't camp. We don't camp. Yeah. We don't camp or we don't ski. It's two things we do not do. And basically, it was a bit of a madness because obviously, like, me on my own, yeah, like, you're walking down the street, people could be like, is that Javadi G?
Yeah.
But white people don't want to be racist. So a lot of the time, I get that. And sometimes I fuck with white people. I think I said this on the last one. You know, people come to me, they're like, oh my God, are you Javadi G? And then sometimes I fuck with them and go, were you trying to say that? We all look the same. And then their PC shit comes out. Oh my God, no, I'm so sorry, man. And I'm like, chill the fuck out, it is me. But, okay, so if it's just me, but then if it's all the Corrupt FM boys at Bestival,
oh my God.
Steve's is 8 foot tall.
Yeah, he is pretty
Grindr
tall.
Just looks like Grindr. He dresses the same. You know what I mean? Like, we are so bait. So
I've got a question about that I want to get into in a sec. But before we do that, like, I don't. I always hate that idea of like white people are like this, black people are like that, and blah blah blah. But just what you said about the fans, it really reminded me. Like, black fans of mine are my favorite fans for one specific reason. They give me such a brief amount of love that it's incredible.
Right.
Like, you can just get on with your day.
Yeah.
Like, they won't even cross the street. They'd be like, well, Doc, yeah. Keep doing what you're doing. No stop and chat. No stop and chat.
I love
bro.
That. I love
They're
that.
They're gone. They got shit to do, bro.
That's guru on Moment of Truth, bro.
I'm not sucking my dick on fucking Newton Green High Road. They got shit to do. And I love all of my fans.
I love that.
But
I love
the white you get that with like chill the, on the whole. Yeah, this reminds me because when I was growing up, I got a whole story.
Rap. Let me rap to you.
I got a whole story.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm like, I'm trying to take my kids to school, man. Yeah. Like, keep it brief. Doc, keep doing what you're doing. Not even the full spud. The spud's just there across the road. Don't even get to spud him.
The air spud.
Air spud. Beautiful. Love.
It's, you know what, I think that as well, but I think it's, you know what, it is love though, no matter
of
what.
Of course, of course,
you know, 100%.
I'm never a dick
but
about
that's
it.
My
I'm never a dick.
I was a dick though, at best of all, I'm going to say that, yeah.
What happened,
and,
what happened?
Like, my girl can testify. Basically, like I said, we were super bait at best of all, yeah, even hoodies up and everything, it's obvious we're the fucking, we're them. It's not, if you see one of us, you see the next one, you know, you're like, it's obviously them. Yeah.
Kind of
so obviously,
deal.
And it's completely all love, because one day no one's going to give a shit, so you have to appreciate it, you know what I mean? Mm. And that's love. But like, I took a picture of this guy, he was gurning off his fucking face.
Oh,
yeah, like, fucking Chivani, bro, yes, man. Hey, you got to pay us? You got to pay us?
No.
Screaming in my head. Took three or four pictures with him, took a picture with his missus, it's love. Thank you very much, bro. You know what I mean? It's love. No matter what, it is love. And then, you know, and then I'm like, okay, and then Tribe was playing. And that's the only reason I went. That's one of the main reasons
I was
waiting for Tribe. Me and my girl, we snuck backstage, you know what I mean? We were like, we tried to get on stage.
Don't tell me you met Q-Tip.
No, and we tried to. Tried to get on the stage. The guy was like, what the fuck are you doing here? Go get the fuck out. So we tried it. But anyway, so we went into the normal crowd.
Yeah.
Civilians.
In
with the normal.
Bloody civilians.
One of them touched
pedestrians.
With the shit munchers. No, I'm joking. No, but a guy who I already took three or four pictures with, who's girding off his tits, drunk as fuck.
Yeah.
I'm quite sober at this time. Yeah, I'm a big guy. It takes me a lot to get drunk. Yeah. And I'm there and I'm waiting for We the People. Yeah, like that's what I want to hear. Like, obviously,
which they did 800 times.
They did. Yeah, yeah. They reloaded it like 400 times.
It's a big tune. That's too many times.
I was
like, I enjoyed every reload, yeah? Every reload. Yeah, I was like, we the people, fucking ramen noodles, yeah, all that shit, yeah? And the same bread come up to me, yeah? Like, after I've just done, like, literally, like, a whole photo shoot for him. Yeah? And he was, like, in my face. But I try to say again, And it was the first time, Doc, but I've been a bit mean to a fan. I've never been, because it's love and I'm very humbled by it. But he was in my face and I was like, I was with my girl and we were like, you know, and I was skanky, like, you know what I mean? I love that shit.
Because
like,
allow me.
You know, all the Muslims, you must, like, that shit hit me when that came out. I felt that, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to skank up, he's in my face for 5 minutes, just another picture, in my ear, rapping in my ear, spitting bars in my ear. Yo, brother, I'm rapping it. Yeah, all this and that.
No.
Yeah. And I said to him in the most polite way, I said, please, bruv, let me enjoy this one song.
Yeah.
And I said, let me live. And he went, it's like that, yeah? It's like that. And I felt so bad. But at the same time, it was like, please let me live. It's one song I want to enjoy.
I don't know if I spoke about this on the last podcast, but there are five words in our business that can just end you around the people that follow you, and it's, I heard he's a prick.
It's that easy. He thinks I'm a prick. 100%.
There was a time.
It's such a thin line to balance.
It's such a thin line. I was on the roundabout in Newton Green. I come out of the Tesco and I got a phone call. My brother-in-law, and he's in hospital. I was like, fuck. I got like an Uber, and the Uber came, and I was like mad stressed. Like I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was just walking around in circles, and then these two girls like appeared as I was getting into the cab.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Ah, Doc Brown." I was like, "Yeah, what's going on? I got to jump in this cab." And then like, "Can you take a picture? And I'm like, "You know what? Not right now."
Yeah.
And one of them went, "Oh, it's like that."
It's like that.
"Oh, it's like that."
No.
And then the other one went, "You know, I heard her as I was getting in the cab."
Yeah.
And she went, "You know what? Some of them are just like that. Some of them are just like that."
Was she talking about race or celebrities? Because
who knows?
She was like, "Reggie Yates is a prick."
That changes the conversation.
So then the next phase is that she tells her fella, he goes to the pub. Well,
that's how it
starts. And he's in the pub with like five other guys. And then one other guy's playing the T-Rap on the fucking YouTube. He's like, "This dude's hilarious." And then he says, "Oh, you know what? I heard Reggie Yates is a prick though." You know?
But it's so spot on, bro, because 100...
And then it's Chinese whispers.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Exactly.
You can meet 100 fans, 99 of them, you could be the nicest guy.
Yeah.
It takes that one moment.
That's the memorable
one. They don't know what you're going through. You know what I mean?
That's the memorable one because everything else is boring, that's it.
It works the other way as well. Sometimes when I've met fans who have been quite abusive, aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Because
they
feel entitled.
Even when they're fucked in that. And then I remember I've met fans twice. And they say to me, "Bruv, you know what, bruv? I'm really sorry. Last time I met you, bruv, I was a bit embarrassed." And that works with me as well. I could see that fan again at Tribe. And I could say, "Listen, bruv, I apologize. I was a bit pissed off. You know, I wanted to enjoy that song. And you were, you know, you were fucked. I was sober." And it happens. You know, it's like about situational shit. Understand we're humans. We have, we're not always up there. We're not always down there. We vary, you know?
I actually, now that you say that, I've got to big up one white fan. I don't know if he'll listen to this. But when I was at the Corrupt FM show at Brixton.
Oh, yeah.
This was before the last podcast. When we did the live podcast here last time.
We were there the night before.
Really? Oh my God, that makes so much sense. Because you know what happened in the crowd? I was in the crowd. And because there was like rap fans there and stuff, there was a few people that recognized me and whatnot. And most people were cool, but sometimes there was too much chat and I just wanted to watch the show. Mm. But there was this one white kid. He looked about 18, 19. He looked mad young. And he went, "Doc Brown," like that. And I thought, "Oh, here we fucking go." And he didn't say anything else. He just gave me a massive high five like that.
Yeah.
Slapped my palm. When I opened my palm, there was a pill in my palm. Like, "It's my fucking nigga right here.
Oi.
Wait, wasn't that? Are you sure that wasn't Steve's? Was that DJ Steve's? That might have been Steve's, bro.
I popped that shit.
I was with you that night. You didn't even break it up. Like, come on now.
I popped that shit. I didn't tell you.
Hey,
you know
pissed.
What? You know what? I shouldn't have as well, because there was a moment where I was talking with Sipa.
Yeah.
And Grindr. We were like, we were on the street. Yeah, remember, you know when you sometimes you do drugs and like, your time perception goes and you're down a minute ago I was in the rave.
Yeah.
Where am I right now? Yeah, it was one of those. I was just on the street and chatting with Sipa and he had like a row of like just groupies and fans like following him. And he was literally just going in the shop to get some Rizzler.
It's a madness.
You know?
It's a madness.
And I was like, yeah.
Can we shout out Sipa, right, aka Grindr right now?
Yeah, he's on like, your show as well.
What a talent.
Every single time, man. I fucking.
And Beats as well. Hugo came on your show. I heard that shit, bro.
He did an episode of the podcast. Yeah, like Beats came on with Jest.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Beats did the podcast. Like, yeah. Fucking.
That's a beardy white podcast.
You know what I mean? There was. I actually felt like beardless. Yeah, it was weird.
I felt naked.
Yeah, it was
so
strange.
Before I forget, the question I wanted to ask you, and this is something I've been like itching to ask, and I was so close to asking Steve, I bumped into him on the train. I was just on the train and I was getting close to asking the question and I had to get off. But it's constantly fascinating me about you guys. When you're doing the live stuff, from the moment you get off the tour bus and you're just out there in sort of public arena, even before the show and after show, are you in character or what?
Nah, it's from the minute we get on stage,
yeah,
we're in character. The minute we get off stage, we're off. It just, you know what it is? It's like, I feel like, you know, like, it's almost
you're not Daniel
like,
Day-Lewis.
You know what it is? No, exactly. You know what it's like? Some, I don't know if you lot have ever like, try to put on a fake accent with someone and then you start with like being like, hello, how are you doing? And then the minute they think you're real, you're like, fuck, I'm gonna have to
I gotta keep this shit up
the whole night.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. Like, I can stay in character. I could do this whole podcast as Chipotle G. Like, we all can, because if you've been doing a character since 2009, like,
you're owning that. Yeah.
You could snap into it. Yeah. Like,
turn it on and off.
Any like situation, any moment, you can switch into it, any situation you want. You put me into any, you know, I could put into, but at the same time, I don't want to do that. Like, you know, I'm me. I'm a human.
Of course, yeah.
So I don't want to be constant. I mean, sometimes my girl says this to me, like, as a comedian, I can't even call myself a comedian, but as someone who's a comedy connoisseur, who studied comedy, like, I've always had this, you know, this thing to perform. Yeah. I want people to like me. I want people to find me funny. Maybe it's the defense mechanism. No, I don't know what it is.
What it is the validation of strangers.
It's 100%
we all do it.
There was some love that was missing when we were younger.
Fucking spot on, bro.
Either you were maybe 100%. In an Asian family and your parents was harsh, or you was like me in a Jamaican family and your parents was harsh. And
Bruv,
you just want the validation of strangers.
It's so true. You know what, bruv? Growing up, yeah, we're getting a bit deep now. My girl's a psychotherapist as well, so you know I'm fucked. Basically, growing up, yeah, like, people didn't expect too much from me. Like, you know what I mean? I left school with like 2 GCSEs and I was like in college blazing weed. Yeah. So like, I did need that validation because people didn't expect me to do anything.
Did they used to
alive.
Put you in goal in secondary school?
No. I got a lethal right foot. If you see soccer, I've been on Soccer AM. You check my volley out, yeah? One man has seen it. Pick you up, bro. But no, but you're right, bro. It's the validation from strangers, which is so bizarre because these are strangers.
Bizarre thing.
It's a very bizarre thing. And it's almost like, I remember I was chatting to someone about it and I was like, when I post something on my Facebook or my Instagram, Ask Your Buddy, obviously, I look at the numbers and I'm like, yeah, okay, that banged. Yeah, that got whatever. That got this, that got that. And I think, sometimes I think, how many likes, how many retweets will ever be enough? And that's some deep philosophical shit. Because it is like this gaping hole of validation from strangers that you will never be able to fill.
Yeah.
So you need to look for other things to fill that void in your life. And it is that as a comedian, like, as someone who's into comedy or into art in general, music, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you want that validation, but you kind of want it to be real. But it doesn't mean that it's not real from strangers. Sometimes you start finding that you get more love from strangers than you do your own friends.
Oh, yeah, no question.
You know, and it's because like, or, you know, like.
But it's instant.
It's instant. It's everything in our life, we live in a fast generation. We want fast love, fast food, fast fucking.
Fucking.
Fucking. Fucking.
We want our Spotify stream the song in a second. We want our Netflix, everything now. So validation you want now. You post a picture, refresh, refresh, refresh. Yeah. It's a madness. And it's almost like a mental health thing. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I think like people who do loads of social media, people are like, oh, that's got loads of parallels to narcissism and all that. And that. Yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, it's like there is an innocence to it as well. Like, I just want to be happy and I want people to be happy for me.
Yeah.
But the more you do it, they want you to kill it. It's a very British thing as well.
Yeah.
They want you to do well. They love the come up. This is what I was saying.
They
about.
Love the come up.
They love the come up. They don't like when you're up there for too long. And as Brits, me as well, we love it when they go down, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
We love
the
fucking burn. Yeah. We love the crash.
Oh, we really love
we
it.
We live for that shit. We live that Princess Diana shit, bro. I watched a documentary recently about it, bro. I was chatting to Dizzy Rascal about it, name drop. But he...
At what point were you with Dizzy Rascal? Was it Best of All?
No, it was the one before. Another one, massive fucking legend, Shape Culture, normal as fuck, bro.
Yeah.
Chatting to him about Princess Diana conspiracies, bro.
Standard.
Chatting to him about 5% all kinds of mad shit, RZA, Wu-Tang Clan, all that shit, bro, And like we were talking about like how Princess Diana was the first person who was hounded by the press. Like the first celebrity in like really think about it.
That was the first time I heard the word paparazzi.
Paparazzi, you get me? And it was like it was that weird thing of like being like she just wanted to live her life. And it was but I remember someone told me it was like there's loads of like my mum loves Princess Diana. All foreign women love Princess Diana.
Yeah, of course.
I'll tell you why, because they relate with her because she is that daughter-in-law that was from not as good as the family, but they all looked down on her. You know, she was never good enough for the family. Yeah. And she was free and she was doing like in Asian culture, this is mad. This is actually mad. Remember growing up, my sister, like she sometimes, you know, she's a beautiful girl. She used to dress a little bit. And people used to say, oh, she's very pretty, but she's a bit free. They turned free into a negative connotation.
Yeah.
She's very free, very modern.
Yeah. Well, from the Afro-Caribbean perspective, I can say we felt a lot of sympathy and love for her as well. Because we were all just like, can she get some different dick? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Just Prince Charles, man. Princess Diana.
She got it. Bro, she
what
got it.
Fuck?
Can she get some new dick from
Prince
somewhere else?
Prince Charles.
No, she got that new dick, trust me.
Yeah. Dodie, bro.
And all good for... No, just Dodie, bro. She was...
You think next one?
No, listen, bro. She was on it and good for her. Like, she was, like, in a loveless marriage.
Shout
she
Diana,
loved
man.
Prince Charles, but he didn't love her, bro. Like, and she just wanted to be loved. And then you watch these documentaries that have all come out, or this bear that's come out, iPlayer, Netflix, and you feel so sorry for her because you think this is beautiful, intelligent woman who was the most famous woman in the world, bro.
Yeah,
without a doubt, bro.
She deserves new dick. She deserves new dick.
She deserves new dick.
And she got it.
Prince
for
Charles
her.
Used to hate on her. You know that, bruv. You know why? Because they used to go out. My man's a proper royal, like it's in his blood. But they used to go out and they used to, like, literally, it's the equivalent of him passing the phone to Prince Charles and saying, can you take a picture of me and Diana? Mm. He used to be fuming that she got a million times more attention than him.
Then she got to clubs with, like, Freddie Mercury and shit. That's why I saw the photos.
She used to party, bruv. Watch his documentary.
She went out in disguise.
She got a lot of dick, bruv. and big up to her. Why not? You're a single woman. Your man's cheating. Her man was cheating on her for 30 years.
For real.
Shit. With Camilla. For like, real. It's good. Like, you know what I mean? Do your thing.
So she was like, you know what? This second son ain't going to look like you.
She popped out some Ed Sheeran looking motherfucker. And good for her, bro.
Story.
She's an icon. She's an icon.
We're nearly coming to the point where we're going to do a Q&A with the audience. Oh, is Michael Payne in the building? I don't even know if he's here or not. Did he show up?
One sec.
Please welcome our roving reporter that we had last time. Good friend of mine, incredible rapper, the wonderful human being, Michael Payne.
I wanted to come through. Can you hear me?
Can everyone hear him?
I wanted to come through the crowd like a talk show host, hence the...
That was beautiful. I like that.
Can we do that again?
Kimmel. All right, we got my roving reporter.
Thank you very much. All right.
So who has a question? Michael Payne will come over to you.
All right, we've got one there.
We'll find... There's one over there.
All right, can we do a ladies first?
Ladies first.
What's your question?
Sure. Doug Brown, would you rather be remembered as stand-up comedian? Or part of the Poisonous Poet?
Oh, poisonous poets.
I like that.
So
like that.
To repeat for the podcast, just in case there's any issues, would you rather be remembered as a stand-up comedian or part as the infamous crew?
Legendary.
Poisonous poets. I guess for those that don't know, is like my first proper rap crew that I was in, and that was my family, and that's how I came up before, long before comedy. Geez, that's a good question. I mean, comedy has given me new life, you know? Like, it's really hard to compare the two because comedy's given me the chance to do what I wanted to do from when I was 6 years old, which is entertain people for a living. I always wanted to do that, you know? So it was, for me, it was any shape or form until I fell in love with rap. And I can't lie, you know, I see Skepta, I chat to Loyal Khana yesterday, you know, amazing. You know, these guys, they're absolutely killing it. And I give them nothing but love. But as soon as I hang up the phone, I'm like, fuck you, I want to be you so much. I want to be you so much. Oh! But, you know, that time's passed and I kind of dealt with it. So I guess, in a way, I'm kind of happier the way it's worked out, you know? Because the main thing is I can be myself way more. Like, if I've got any regrets, it's keeping the name Doc Brown. Because since I got into comedy, I've just been Ben and it's been beautiful. But people still call me Doc, which is like, that reminds me of rap, you know? But yeah, I would say probably the short answer is neither. I just like to be an entertainer, man. Like, I fuck up personal relationships, family, all sorts of stuff. But you put me in front of a crowd of motherfuckers who don't give a shit about me and I don't give a fuck about them. And I will make them love me. Like, I can do that shit.
And how is that different? How is that different compared to whether you're on stage like bare without a fucking beat, and when you're on stage when we go on tour and there's a fucking DJ?
It's so different, man. Yeah. It's so different. Like when things fuck up, when you got the music there, you can. I mean, you remember like when we were so gassed when that show was going so well, and we did. The single Corruptible, and I totally forgot all the lyrics.
I remembered all of it.
And you were looking at me in my eyes going, this is the next line. I'm going to say the next line to get you back on track. And I was just like, yeah, and because like I'm here and here we go. Blah, blah. And people were still going, wah, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because in comedy, you haven't got that kind of
the fallback
luxury because it's just, it's you a cappella. And it's way more stressful, way more troubling and way more raw. But I think it's given me like crazy strength.
Definitely.
It's like if I ever exercised, I guess it would be like, you know, doing weights or something like that. Yeah. You're ready for anything. Like, I don't feel like anyone can fuck with me now. Like, I look at all the other artists, I think that's amazing. I couldn't do what you do. But anybody that's trying to do what I do, I'm just like, yeah, all right, bro. You're all right. You know what I mean?
That's a perfect ending to that. Good, Michael Payne, have you got the next question for us?
Asin, quick question. Where did the inspiration come from for Chibadi G? I'm really hoping it's an uncle of yours who you basically impersonated.
It's a combination of uncles, friends, but I'd say mainly my dad. Like my dad, like if you were, you probably
is that
weren't.
The voice? The voice?
Where's the voice? Who's the voice? The voice is like a bit more modern. Like my dad's a bit more old school. Like he's, you know, he can speak well, but he, you know, he's still like instead of like, but instead of like, you know, he fucks his W's and V's up like all Asians. But instead of like, I remember like in the new series. If you watch the new series, I got a new thing where basically my dad, I've been trying to put into the show for years. Instead of oh my god, my dad says, oh my god. And it's little things like that I love. My dad is a hustler. Wow. Like my dad, since a young age, was like, he was like the Tony Soprano of Hounslow, but on a very low level. Like he owned, like there was a parade of shops, there was an Indian takeaway, there was a taxi rank, there was an internet cafe. And they were all like in house.
Such an alien concept for 2017.
I know, it's a madness. And you know what? It's not even internet. It used to be one of them call places. Then when you go into the booth and you call international. Yeah. So it was that. It was called Global Communications. And yeah, that was in the 90s. So like mid-90s, late 90s. And then my dad used to run that shit. It was like four or five shops. Mm. He all owned every single one of them. Obviously, Dodge.
Yeah,
but like
It's one thing I love about the 90s. Every Asian motherfucker, every black motherfucker that I knew that was in on the business shit, they had global somewhere in the name of their business. Just so they could say,
global.
When you see them, you're like, what are you up to now? And like, bro, I got some international shit going on, bro.
It's
international.
So spot on.
It's international. Don't worry about it. It's international.
Global.
No, but yeah, like my dad was a bit of a
one-to-one
legend.
He was
a bit of a legend growing up. Like, you know what I mean? He was like, he had all these businesses and shit. But he was always like, my dad could always make money, but he could never keep money. That was the thing. So we 1 month be rich. Next month, fucking loan sharks coming around.
That is a man
TV.
After my own heart.
Yeah, bro. It was like that. And, you know, it is based on him. But the thing with my dad is that he was always aware of what he was doing. So he knew when he fucked a business up. Like, he's had so many businesses, you know? And my dad's a lovable, likable guy. Like, everyone who knows him loves him. He's a G, you know what I mean? And he's so proud. He knows Tribology is kind of based on him. He's so proud, but the thing is...
He's cool with that. He's cool.
He kind of misses the joke, though. He kind of thinks Tribology's a sick guy. He's like, oh, he's a bloody good guy. So, yeah. But it's not just my... I can't just say it's just my dad. Like, my dad, I say, was... And the thing is, like, my mum, like, bless her, she was born here. She's an Ealing girl, West London girl. She protected me from a lot of the stuff growing up. So she didn't tell my dad was... I didn't know my dad was dodgy until I was like... 17, 18 years old. I thought my dad was just a hardworking guy. I remember the moment I realized is when I went to my boy's yard and my dad, his dad was like, oh, your dad. My dad used to go by the name of Jazz. His name's Ijaz. His name used to have, could be called Jazz. He used to drive a lowered Merc, leather seats, car phone.
The only people I know called Jazz are dealers.
Exactly. But it was so jokes that he had a lowered Mercedes, red Mercedes, leather seats, pimped out. He had a car phone in his thing, yeah. But he could only ever call his other friend who had a car phone. And it was like in the same, so he just called him up and be like, hey man, I remember he called him up and he's like, how you doing? He's like, yeah, just driving, man. He's like, cool. But no, I used to learn, I didn't know about that. I thought my dad, I didn't know what my dad did. I remember one of my early memories there, bro, was sneaking downstairs, 3-4 in the morning, looking down through my stairs and seeing my dad there with all these dodgy braids, smoking cigars, drinking whiskey, not knowing that these were these fucking underworld criminals of the Hounslow.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? But like, it was weird, bruv. And it was like this kind of, and now, like, now my dad's obviously legit. Like, he's, you know, he
obviously,
I mean, he
of
did
course,
it. He,
of course.
And like I said, like my dad now is like, he's completely chilled out. But what is a parallel was basically when I was walking down the street with him like a few months ago, Hounslow High Street.
Yeah.
And but back in the day, I remember as a kid, I couldn't walk 2-3 minutes without someone stopping my dad. Mm. Oh, Jordy Saab, respect.
Mm. Everyone's got something
literally
to say.
Some Tony Soprano shit, kissing his ring finger.
Wow.
Because he was that guy who wanted to help everyone. And, and now I remember when I was with him, it was the opposite way.
Yeah.
People stopping me. And then my dad, I remember it was such a sincere, honest moment. He went, bloody hell. He went, I don't know anyone anymore. he went, no one knows me anymore. And my dad loves that. My dad loves being the boss man. He loves being the pimp.
Yeah, of course.
And that was like, now he's like, now my son's the man. Now my son's got the juice. You know?
You got the juice.
Yeah, you got the juice now,
Grandma.
But yeah, it was weird, but like, he is the nicest man. And like you said, bruv, you get older and you learn things about him.
Yeah, man.
And you understand
that shit you put on your parents when you're younger, all that shit. You're like, oh, you fucking, you guys, like, you're losers. That's why, like, this is going wrong in my life, blah, blah, blah. When you get older, you start to realize, especially if you have children yourself, like, you start to realize, oh my God, the sacrifices my parents took for my sorry ass.
Yeah.
The shit my parents stopped doing all the fun shit they wanted to do for my sorry ass. And when you realize that, the relationship switches and it can be beautiful again.
Yeah,
you know?
100%.
Shout out my parents who are here right now. Somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, Corinne's parents.
Big up Corinne's parents.
Your parents are cool as shit.
Liz and Brian.
Your parents are cool as shit.
Every time.
You know, I always think it's so weird that we never knew each other as youngsters.
Yeah.
And that we became friends as adults. And what was even weirder was when I met your parents, because I was like, how were your parents not even friends of my parents?
Yeah.
You know, because like, everything about your upbringing is so similar to mine, you know, in terms of like that, you got that kind of like, fuck the system type shit, and your parents support that. You got some cool ass parents, man. Like, they just remind me of...
I second that.
Yeah, they remind me of my own childhood, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Gonna make me cry and shit. All right, so Michael Payne, roving reporter.
Yeah. I keep forgetting what we're supposed to be doing.
We got a question
just
over
standing up.
He's there. He's waiting.
You're doing me a favour. I'm high as fuck, to be fair. So that sit down was nice.
This is what we want. I'm happy.
Who else has got a question?
There's a hand up over there.
We've got a hand up here.
Hey, guys, how you doing? What I was wondering was, for any of you guys, in fact, really, was there like a particular spur that made you think, you know what, 9 to 5, anything like that is just a waste of time. I'm going to follow my whatever art, craft. Was there like a particular spur in any one of your lives where you just said, no?
One thing about that 9 to 5 thing, I think that's an anomaly because like I work 9 to 5. Do you know what I'm saying? Like my job is probably longer than 9 to 5. Like how long I'm on, how long I'm doing my business is probably actually longer than that. So the concept of belittling the 9 to 5, which is something if you listen to as much rap as I do, you do like you think, oh yeah, fuck a 9 to 5. But actually, like I rate motherfuckers that do a 9 to 5. But yeah, the essence of the question is like, when did you think like you wanted to do something extraordinary? And for me, I can't remember anything else. I used to love when I was really little, I'm talking like 5 or 6, I used to love it if more family or more weirdos, a lot of times more weirdos, because this is where my parents were. I grew up in this little council flat in Kilburn, and there was always just strange people with crazy stories. And, you know, everyone was always, I mean, my parents had a little... had a little, you know, in some of those council flats, you have like just a little balcony. Yeah. We used to have the window box where you grow like your little tomatoes and whatnot. My parents grew weed on there, you know. So like, there's always climate, people getting high. Yeah, crazy.
That's impressive.
And it was always just interesting people. And I was fascinated by all these big characters that came in. My sister was exactly the same. And whenever they came in, both of us, we wanted to be able to have a better story than them. But of course we didn't, because we were small children. So we would always just act the fool, like pretend to be someone or put on a voice or something like that. And then everyone would go, oh, look, Ben's doing something silly. And everyone would crowd around. And that would be like my favorite moment where everyone crowded around. I'd be like, okay, cool, it's my time. I'm going to do some shit. The fact that I actually professionally, as soon as I was old enough to work, I got into youth work and did that for a whole decade. When I look back on it, I think, yeah, that's the only job I could have done, like so-called normal job, because it was kind of the same. Do you know what I'm saying? I was kind of a stand-up. I was kind of an entertainer because I had all these kids who were just like, what are we doing today? And I had to hold that crowd, because you know what it's like talking to young people, right? You know what I'm saying?
They're fucking idiots.
With no disrespect, you and I both losing our hair and shit. You know what it's like. You try and talk to some young people. I came out of my flat one time. I still live on a council estate, but I came out of my flat one time and a dude upstairs from me, like him and his boys, they're real young. They're like, you know, 18, 19. They was out front talking shit about Nas.
Oh, bruv.
And I couldn't handle it.
No.
I could hear it from my bathroom.
That's one of those situations that you step, even if you're taking a shit,
you have to say something.
A shower.
You have to.
You come down, you cancel everything.
It's Nas.
But I guess the point of what I'm saying is that when I came down and tried to speak to these young people about Nas, almost immediately, you know when you hear your voice on a voicemail or something like that and you're like, oh my God, I sound like such a cunt. Yeah. Like, it was like that. I came out and I was like, hey guys, come on, can't. This is one of the most important people.
Guys, that's Nas, man.
In the history of hip hop culture.
Like, not cool, dudes, all right?
The way these boys clammed up, it was like I was police. Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
Motherfuckers was looking at their feet. Who's this old guy trying to talk to us about Nas?
Man's are pausing their drawers and shit.
I think it's important to note that it's the same. We have to think of context, and it's the same way that people might have tried to speak to us about Sugar Hill Gang.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Very true.
Of course.
Very true.
You know what I mean?
But you know what I'm saying? To get back to the point, to do that job as a youth worker, it required me to have something about me in order to connect with these kids, you know? And I went from that into working with young offenders. And then from that, I started my own charity working with asylum seeking kids who were unaccompanied minors, basically. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's not a rally, bro, chill. And... And
Love, though.
Like, all of that. Yeah, no, pure big love. Up, big I'm up. Just being a dick. But, cool. But you know, all of that, it came from a place of heart and a place of soul, because that's how I was raised. My mum was a youth worker before me. But there was an element of the entertainer there.
Of course.
Because I had to show up and be like, we're doing some fun shit today.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the short answer to your question is, it started when I was 6 and it went on until I was 30, which is nuts.
For me, I just fucking hate having a boss, man. Anyone telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Fuck that shit.
Apart from me, like, I will tell you what the fuck to do. Like,
I mean, at least 90% of the time I'll do it. If we got any more questions, is there anyone here that wants to ask a question? She wants. She'll have another question if Mr. Nishin's Michael Payne
turn Nishin into a conversation.
Let's do it.
What would you all give each other? That's one bit of advice.
I didn't hear the last.
Are there
bit,
girls but... involved, or is it just us three?
She's turned into true for.
I'm ready. I've been waiting for this opportunity.
What would you say Chlamydia. To each other, just being like, oh, you know what, man, next year, do this?
Oh, we do that all the time. I mean,
we do
like,
it all of the time.
Honestly, whenever I meet Corinne, you know, we'll have a breakfast or we'll have a lunch or like we'll get fucked up. Doesn't matter what it is,
yeah.
Whether we're sober or fucked up or we're partying or what, we've always both really real with that kind of like, it would be dope if you did this yeah. or like, see that last thing you did, I think it was sick. But there's this other, like, I will take that from him. You know what I'm saying? And then there's certain people like I love that real constructive shit with. And it's funny because I only met Asim 3 or 4 times, but I've got this sense about him that he's one of them dudes as well that, you know, from the right person, from somebody he respects, he could take constructive criticism and back and forth.
Yeah.
Back and forth, that shit is so valuable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
it gets
like
to a point
if I met you and you were like, you know what, I'm glad you like the show. Personally, like what you do, I think it's a little bit lowbrow. Like it would have fucking hurt.
Of course.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it would have hurt. Because like I can get that. Like, you don't understand how many times I got that from stand-ups.
You get that, bro.
Because stand-ups, like you lot don't know. All the fucking stand-ups that you love, they're fucking
aggressive
pricks.
Shit
that
passive yeah. aggressive shit.
And you don't know how many times since I started doing stand-up, I had dudes that said to me, hey, you know, yeah, great show. I mean, obviously... You know,
no, that as soon as the obvious yeah. thing comes
get,
in.
Get that all
you
the time,
mean? No, that's
bro.
It.
Obviously, you're cheating a little bit yeah. because you do the no. raps no, and, no, you know, no. so you don't you really have to the do time. The jokes. Yeah. You don't really have to do the jokes. And I'm listening to this, I'm nodding, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying, I should work harder. And I'm thinking, hold on, I just did 20 minutes of stand-up with yeah. 3 minutes of rap, right? Yeah. And in those 3 raps that each last a minute, there's a joke every bar.
Yeah.
So I did more jokes in a minute than you did in your whole 20. And you're telling me I'm cheating.
So this yeah, is comedians.
Fuck you, man. Yeah, comedians are the worst, man.
Nah, they're the worst. It's straight up, it's straight up boys, projection. It's projection.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you know what it is, bro. Sometimes you get to a level of success where everyone around you is a yes man.
Yeah.
And everyone around you is going to say you killed every joke. You
yeah,
killed
that's,
this.
That's not helpful.
That. It's not healthy. It's not helpful. So I personally have people around me who will tell me if it was shit. You know, like my
You're
boys from Hounslow.
You're very fortunate as well to have people
us
within
boys.
People just do nothing.
Us boys
who you went
will.
To school yeah. with.
Bro, like. We're like so critical of each other and ourselves.
Yeah.
We're all involved. Sometimes I'll be like, bro, that Steve's joke didn't work or that Grindr joke. I don't know, bro, say this or say that.
And you're an editor as well, kind of looking at these
all
things.
All of us, bro.
Are you all in the edit?
It's such a collaborative process.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Where like nothing can get green lit. Like my boy Tony knows, yeah. Tony works very closely with us, yeah. Mm. He knows whenever anything.
Big up Tony Black.
Big up Tony Black, yeah. But anything, it can be a photo shoot.
Yeah.
If one of us is not happy with it, it's not going to happen, or we have to compromise.
Yeah.
And it's a true democracy, man. And it is completely the opposite of yes men.
Okay.
It's about we're going to help each other to become better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're in the edit and you're taking all that constructive criticism back and forth everywhere. When Marv chips in and goes, ah, this shit's not funny, are you like, bro, you were in this episode for like 2 seconds.
We got Marvin J every
for
time.
For all those who don't know, Marvin J is
big
my
Marvin
brother.
J every
Fantasy.
Time.
He plays a very
Fantasy?
Minuscule role in people just in that thing. But yeah, no, no, no. I mean,
also,
I feel like he's doing just enough to just get laid.
That's all. That's
big
all
up
that
Marv.
Matters.
That's my brother.
That's all that matters.
But you know what's funny? Like, I knew Marv from college, like back in the day. Like, you know, he's
been
a
bow, bro.
He's a don, bro. Yeah. He's from the jump off days, bro.
Brav.
But yeah. No, you're right. Obviously, I'm talking about us, the four creators.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like we all respect each other's opinion, and it's about not having these yes men around you, bro. Because yeah. It's like you start believing your own bullshit.
Yeah. Mm.
That's when it becomes dangerous. Like, you need to check yourself, and you need your people around you to check you as well. Because when you start believing that everything you do is gonna bang, that's when you're gonna. I went to Edinburgh for the first time. I was telling you in it, and I did a whole. Well, I say a whole. I did a 15-minute talk about failing.
Yeah,
basically about all the times I went drama school. I got kicked out of drama school.
Nice.
I was like, I was a fuck up for so long. You know what I mean? And it's about like having that real reality check, people to check you and be like, bruv, that's not funny. And they're not coming at you from a competitive. Like my boys from Hounslow, they're not in my field. They're not comedians. They're working Heathrow and they're shotters and all that. No, for real. So when they're like, come up to me,
they're working together, Heathrow and shotters.
Let me tell you an interesting fact. All right,
that's a business.
Is anyone from Hounslow here? Okay, no worries.
That was the deepest.
I know. I wasn't expecting. I was expecting one person from Hounslow.
There's always got to be one.
Let me tell you something about Hounslow. Yeah, if you're from Hounslow,
yeah,
100,000,000%. Now, if you lot know any from Hounslow, go ask them this today. Yeah, text them. Say no, for real. Yeah, for real. This is some institutionalized shit. Yeah, 80% of my friends who I went to school with, their parents work in Heathrow. Or they work in Heathrow.
Wow.
You don't understand. Heathrow is, I think, the biggest, most busiest airport in the world, right? Hounslow, you know how close Hounslow is to Heathrow?
Yeah,
it's 10 minutes, bro. Yeah. Now, what you do, you go primary school, you go secondary school,
I love this story. I love this story.
And then, bro, you don't go uni, You work in the family business for a bit, whatever that is, corner shop, whatever it is, And then you go to Heathrow. You to live and die in Heathrow, bro.
Wow.
That is, I can't even remember my original point. But all I'm saying is,
to live and die in Heathrow.
But it's almost sad because, like, you remember, in those kind of hood films, they're like, there's only two ways out the ghetto, man.
It's not true.
You're a baller, you're a rhymer. And, like, I swear to God, bro.
It's Heathrow.
There's a third option. It's the fifth runway.
I can't even remember what we were asking.
No, but all I'm saying is sad.
I'm so
it's
happy
like,
about that, the ending. Of
sometimes
that.
I feel like so many of my friends, I can name you like 7 or 8 of my friends who are working Heathrow. I'll tell you what, bro. Some of the funny, Doc, I don't know if you can agree with me on this or testify to this. Some of the funniest motherfuckers I know, are some of my boys that I grew up with in Hounslow.
Oh, bro. Yeah.
And they will never ever do anything in comedy. You know why? Because they're funny and they don't know they're funny. And the minute they know the camera's on them, they shit. Yeah. But they are the funniest motherfuckers.
My crew of like my day ones.
Bruv.
Can I tell you something about my day ones?
Funniest motherfuckers.
I'll tell you something about my day ones. Not one of them has ever come to a stand-up show of mine.
Same. They don't come to any of my
Because they do gigs. Not believe. They do not believe that I could possibly be funny enough to entertain strangers. Because I was the least funny motherfucker out of a group of eight
Same,
boys.
Bro. Same.
Eight boys.
Same.
Least funny. So they're just like, I'll say, I'm doing this show. It doesn't matter how big it gets.
Yeah.
Live at the Apollo. Opening for Ricky Gervais. It doesn't, they don't give a fuck.
Doc, how real is that though? That is the opposite of a yes man.
Oh no, it's beautiful.
I was just telling my man I was chilling with Gordon Ramsay the other day. My boy's like, shut the fuck up, bro. Yeah.
They don't give a fuck.
They don't give a fuck.
You remember that last scene?
They don't give a shit.
You remember that last scene?
Bro, if you were chilling with Noriega, it'd be a different story.
That's different.
Maybe.
That's different.
Cool, that's different.
You remember that last scene from the Facebook movie? What was it called? The Facebook movie?
Social Network.
Remember the last scene? Where he's like, he's made Facebook, he's going to be a multimillionaire, but he's still trying to refresh the screen to speak to this chick that won't speak to him.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it is. I'm not saying I'm on Facebook levels, but I'm like, I would just, you know what? I just killed, last night, 9,500 people in the Spectrum in Oslo. You know, I floored them. to the point where I thought, you know what, tonight, because me and Ricky would joke about it. I would say, tonight, you got a job on your hands. Other nights, it's like, Ricky's like, thank you, you were quite shit. Tonight, I'm killing it. Last night, Ricky was like, great, all right, now I got to fucking work, you know, because last night I killed it.
Let me ask you a question, yeah? You in that 9,000 people, yeah, that's why I only invited my girl and her best friend, yeah, because I feel like with my girl, I'm very open. But I didn't invite anyone else. And I could have invited my house of boys. I could have bought loads of people. But I swear down, if anyone from my, like, house of boys or my boy, even the Corrupt FM boys, any of them that was sitting in the crowd, yeah, I wouldn't be this open. Because I would feel nervous.
That's what I'm saying,
because
bro.
They would be looking at me like, boys, fucking know, it's your boys.
I would have done, yeah. I would have done bad, a different
yeah?
set.
He thinks he's funny, yeah? Yeah.
I would have done a different set last night.
If I was there, would it be different?
If I saw one of those motherfuckers in the crowd, I would have done a different set.
Also, my proudest moment is the fact that one joke that I told you that's in the set about the fucking Renaissance painting.
Oh,
bro.
That became a bit.
That became a bit that revived
my career for like a year.
Me and also, because I legit... It wasn't even... I wasn't trying to do nothing.
But no. that's what it's about, though, bro.
It was funny as fuck.
But that's what it's about, bro. Listen, let me... Going on that fucking point, yeah? I called my boy up today. My boy was one of my best friends, yeah? I went to go visit my friends six, 7 months ago in Hounslow, yeah? My boy just moved in with this girl. And his girl's brother is like this shotter in Hounslow who's a big man, yeah? He's respected. And he's moved into his house. So they're living together. So it's a bit awkward, yeah? And when we went to go visit him, yeah? We were in the living room. It was like 3-4 in the morning, and we were chatting to him. He's all drunk, yeah. And we were like, "How's it working with the brother? Like, is that awkward? Because you're obviously with his sister and that." And he's going to me. He's going, "Listen, yeah, I fucking run this house. Yeah, I'm the fucking big man around here. Yeah, I'm gonna fucking take over." And we were going, "Why are you whispering?"
The whisper brag. The whisper brag is
bro,
the
bro. He was whispering like, "I fucking run this place. Yeah, he wants to fucking try something. Yeah, he can fucking try it. I'm the fucking king." And we're like, "Why are you whispering?" He's like, "Nah, don't watch that." And then. So it's shit like that that inspires me. So it's not just my dad. In the new series, if you watch the latest episode, yeah, episode 5, Chabuddy G's in the new shop, yeah, and he's got a new boss, and the boys come in and they're going, "Stag, stag, stag," and Chabuddy G's told him that he's the boss of the place, yeah. So he's going, "You know what? I'll fucking run this place."
The whisper break.
That guy, yeah, that fucking guy thinks he's sick, yeah. I'm the fucking boss around here, yeah. I'm the fucking player. And then Steve goes, "Why are you whispering, bro?" And it's like,
that's dope.
Literally jacked it from a real life situation. And I told my boy, and my boy was so happy, and he said to me, "You know what?" Yeah. He went, "Ask him, you ain't shit. I'm right. Your material, bro." Yeah. Right, and that's love. Yeah. That's love.
That's beautiful.
And that's
man.
What. But here's the difference, though.
That's beautiful.
What does an artist do? I've always debated this. Like, what define an artist? Mm. I think no matter what genre you is, an artist is someone who puts something into perspective.
There you go.
That is a skill.
That's like, the skill that you have that your boys don't have.
I can be the funniest guy. I can be the greatest actor. Yeah. But if I can't put it into perspective, into a scene where it's got a setup and a punch, and I can construct it into a scene and it makes sense and all this and that, then no one's gonna see it to the mass. And in a way, that's some sick shit. I'm not selling out. Yeah. But
That's the talent.
It's putting it into perspective. And artists put something into perspective. You know, the greatest advice I got from my, like when I did film and broadcast at uni, I did script writing.
Yeah.
Like I took a module up on it. And he said the greatest advice he gave me was write about what you know.
Yeah.
And that applies to anything. If you know, music, anything. Mm-hmm. You know, the minute you know that someone's writing about something that they're trying to imagine, or they're trying to put themselves, you know, in those shoes. You can tell straight away. Like, you know, when you see those actors, I don't know, any criminal, they're like, "Yeah, wagwan, bruv." And you're like, you've never been in any dangerous situation
in your
life.
Of them.
Write about what you know. And that sincerity always comes through, no matter what you do. Like,
there's so many comedians that do that, and it's so fucking annoying.
It's just like it's insincere, and like you can see that. Like, you know, I can always kind of tell when people are kind of chatting shit.
Yeah,
because it's just.
Hey, did I ever tell you about the time I was?
It is that.
Oh,
you know?
It was one of the craziest situations I've ever been.
And I had to shag a couple of men,
and I turned around and this guy said the most insane thing you've ever heard in your life.
But it's like, write about what you know. Exactly. And that's the best advice I've ever been given. And it has helped me. And I've never, ever written about some fucking shit that I've never related to. Everything I've ever done creatively has been something that I've experienced.
Yeah, because the truth is funny, man.
I mean, we're nearly out of time. The fact I've got one cue card with questions, and the top of the cue card is for you, Doc, is whale meat. I just wanted to ask you before we cut it off. I just wanted to tell everyone the story of the whale meat because it was so impressive.
I walked into my hotel room
in Oslo
yesterday, and it was a beautiful room, and the fridge was there illuminated. I like an illuminated fridge with a glass door. I love that. It makes
That's
me feel
beautiful.
Welcome.
You know? Yeah. It's quite sexy.
But all that was
really
in there,
sexy.
All that
sensual,
was in there was a piece of paper.
Sensual.
Yeah. All that was in there was, I was already hard. And all that was in there was a piece of paper that I could see had been written on. I opened the door, I pulled out the piece of paper, and it said, there's some whale meat in here. It's completely fresh. Really sorry, we couldn't finish it before we left, but we wanted to leave it for you, so please enjoy. And the whale meat was not there because obviously, you know, the housekeeping had come in and taken the meat, but they left the note. They left the note, which I couldn't understand.
No. The disappointment.
Yeah.
It was
I would have been excited to eat the whale meat.
I know.
Whale meat.
The whale meat.
What do you do with
whale meat?
If you're in a hotel, what do you do with cold whale meat?
Put it in a sandwich.
How do you enjoy that?
That's what I do with everything.
Put that shit in a sandwich.
I love the way they said we couldn't take it with us. Like, I could take it with me. Where am I taking it? Where am I taking the whale meat?
This is true. So, and then also rapping. That was another one of my things.
Rapping was a question.
Rapping?
You're doing that. We're going back on tour in December, so
that's
we should
right.
at least
yeah,
talk
yeah.
about
We're
that.
We're going to do some more shows. I'm going to release a second single from my little comeback album.
With Example?
Yeah, the single's called Lights Out. It features an old friend of mine, Example, and it's going to come out next month alongside a vinyl version of the album. And then me and Corinne are going to take the album back on tour for like 10 days. So Londoners, come to the London show. It'll be a lot of fun.
There you go. And I should plug my new album again, since I've got a captive audience. This is where it gets good, out September 29th. We've got some vinyl.
Yeah, you should get a vinyl before you leave.
I should say it before you go. We've got some of the vinyl over there, some t-shirts, and also some free lighters and stickers. So go fucking get that shit. And before we go as well, thank you all so much for coming.
Yeah,
it means a lot.
Very special, man.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. I had a good time.
You've been absolutely incredible. This has been Thanks for Trying Podcast, episode 18. Thank you so much to my guests, Asim Chowdhury and Doc Brown. Make some fucking noise.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming and getting drunk with us on a Sunday night. Big up yourselves. Get home safe.
You have been listening to episode 18 of the Thanks for Trying Podcast with myself, The Last Skeptic. Thank you so much to my guests, Asim Chowdhury and Doc Brown. Big thank you to everyone that came down and packed out the Phoenix and got absolutely smashed with us. Shout out to Seb White for recording it. Do not forget my brand new album, This Is Where It Gets Good, including this beat you're hearing right now, is out now. Go have a listen, go cop it, go do all that good shit. You'll make me very happy. The Thanks for Trying Podcast will be back with more special guests and more offensive shit for episode 19. Big love.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.